You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Anita Glesta. Anita, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about what you're working on now. I know there's two projects that are coming up and a number of things, but what is it that you're focusing on now, the two projects perhaps that you're preparing for?
One project will be happening at the end of September, and it is the Watershed Project, which is a public video projection that will happen on the face of the National Theatre in London on the Thames, and it is during the Totally Thames Festival, and it will last for about a week, and it's a projection of a frenzied fish in saturated colors, and I'm happy to speak a little bit about its legacy, too, because it's been a few years in the making.
Yeah, please do, because that's also a very exciting public work that's going to, I would imagine, get a tremendous amount of attention and views.
Right. No, I'm hoping it gets attention because what I am hoping to achieve with this work, if an artist can hope for such a thing, I say parenthetically, is that it actually is, in a way, a vehicle or a billboard for climate scientists to be able to exchange information about what's happening right now, particularly with water. And it's a project that I was inspired to do, so to speak, after I was commissioned to do a work through Artport and the United Nations during the COP15 conference in Copenhagen, where I did a video installation about how women in the third world are affected by climate change. And being at this conference, which was a very challenging one, it was kind of a disaster conference, which was sad, although things have really improved significantly since then. That was 2009. But I also learned a lot about what is happening with climate change then. And when I returned to New York, I actually had won a fellowship to study the old scriptures on 14th Street at the Waiete in the foundation of LABA. And it was...
fascinating. I'm sorry, but where was that?
It's a foundation called LABA, and it is a foundation that is dedicated to the study of old scriptures, and it chooses around 8 artists from different disciplines every year with different themes. And at the end...
That's in New York City, you were saying?
Yes, in New York City. Mm-hmm.
I just never heard of it. LABA, it sounds like one of those gems that are there, but you'd never know exists. So they're a small center.
It is absolutely studying. A gem. I can't extol the virtues enough of this wonderful foundation. And it's relatively new. It's a few years old. So that's why you wouldn't have heard of it. But it was very inspiring to sit amongst scholars and also peers from different disciplines to talk about what happened, the mythologies, really, not religious, but to deconstruct these mythologies. And at the end of the fellowship, they supported a project by all of the artists to do a work of their own that related to some of the scriptures. And so it seemed completely natural for me to think about the experience that I had just had in Copenhagen, and I couldn't help but think about 14th Street as the artery that was once actually like Canal Street, in a way, a canal, or certainly there were streams that connected the Hudson River with the East River. And so I thought that I would like to flood 14th Street, actually, because I became increasingly aware of Manhattan's incredible vulnerability sitting in the mouth of the ocean that nobody thinks about, and the fact that we tread on really very thin ground surfaces over water on this island. And this was, of course, before Hurricane Sandy and before Hurricane Irene. But I wanted to make Manhattanites and everyone else who visits New York aware of this relationship. And so for one evening, I projected fish onto the sidewalk on 14th Street, just in front of the YHA, which is between 1st and 2nd Avenue. It lasted for a few hours, but it was pretty interactive and compelling, and I decided that this is something that I really wanted to do for New York. And so a few months later, Hurricane Sandy happened. It was kind of crazy timing, this one. And I guess, you know, we all in New York, of course, had our frozen moments for several months after. But once I felt that New York had recuperated, I actually, I guess I don't really remember exactly how it happened, but the New Museum Ideas Festival selected this work to be projected both outside in the Lower East Side on the wall of St. Patrick's Lower Manhattan, the old basilica. There's an old St. Patrick's on Mott Street. And then within the schoolhouse.
Yeah, that's a wonderful church on Mott Street.
That's St. Patrick's.
With a gorgeous wall that's around it, I think, right?
That's where it was projected, right. So it was projected for an evening there, and then it was an immersive installation within the old schoolhouse with the Vay group during the festival as well, so that you walked into a room and basically we're surrounded by these frenzied fish. And so that all happened, and then I really, because of the kind of work that I do in the public, which I really feel it's absolutely essential to be interactive, to really invite people into the work. I kept thinking, how could I make this even more relevant for what we're experiencing right now with the world and climate change? And so I approached scientists and I thought, you know, if I can put this outside in a really big way and in a really beautiful and seductive way, I can bring the message, so to speak, from climate scientists that they really have needed to get out there about what's happening to the world. And so I feel that I have begun to finally do this in the large way by beginning to do this with the Totally Tense Festival on the face of the National Theater and with all of the material that will accompany these frenzied fish. I have websites to many environmental organizations so that people will be directed to this. And in a way, I feel that this really begins to realize my mission in this work, which is to not just make it a pretty and exciting piece, but make it that as a way to invite people to really understand what's happening and be more effective, I guess, in my role as an artist.
But with your website, you're also giving people access to more information. It's also about the public understanding more and in depth and doing their own research, it sounds like, which that installation, in a sense, could encourage and get people
precisely
to do.
Precisely. Thank you. Thank you for saying that so clearly, yes.
And let's talk about the next one. I mean, because these are, you know, both obviously the context for those who don't know you of activist public work that you've done in the past. Let's talk a little bit about a different project, which is at opening at the White Box Gallery in New York City on September 3rd. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. This is a show that's curated by Fionn Gunn, who is a London-based curator, and Juan Puentes, who is his director of White Box. And it has, I believe, 20 artists from all over the world who have each been commissioned to do a work about sexual slavery. And I was asked to do a work specifically about the women, the Roma and Jewish women in concentration camps who were used as sexual slaves. Other works in the show will be about the comfort houses in Japan, and there are artists from really all over the world, South America, and many from Asia, who are doing works specific to their places. And when this show is over in New York, it will be moving to Shanghai and Beijing. So it's actually really going to be very interesting and powerful.
Those sound powerful. That's quite some material to deal with. And how are you approaching that? I mean, that seems like difficult material to approach and also difficult material to get people to get more involved in the way we were just talking about, you know, the environment. We want people to know more about it and take action to some extent. With this issue, I would think that's more difficult.
You know, it's really true. in general, and it's even true specifically as a visual artist, because, you know, many documentaries have been made about this. More and more writing is happening about the subject, particularly in the last few months. But to find a medium as an artist that is not really didactic or illustrative is always a challenge for me in what I do. And so I thought long and hard about how I was going to do this, and have come up with distilling one particular story that, in reading the archival material about this, struck me, because there were many versions of this story, but they were all more or less correlated to an event that was supposed to have taken place of a young dancer who was on the line to go into Auschwitz, who was very beautiful. And, of course, the Nazis saw Jews as animals and were not supposed to have sex with them. But, of course, that was not possible, as we know. And there was much sexual slavery within the camps, amongst everyone, for food, for survival, really. This story was interesting to me because, in a way, it turned inside out how sexuality can be both used as power and disempowerment. And so that's why I chose to work with this story. And what it was this dancer was pulled out of line by two Gestapo officers, and she decided to do a striptease to seduce them. And in this seduction, she was able to pull their pistols from them and shot them dead, and then she was shot. And so what I've done with this work was to actually have a dancer do this, and I projected her on the floor and project her on the wall. And on the floor alongside of this is almost a few pounds now of hair, because I have read that in the preservation of Auschwitz that's been happening in the last year or so, the one place where there was some questions about how to preserve it was the tons of hair that, literally tons of hair that is still left there. And so what has been decided was that they're going to be put in vitrines and naturally decompose. But I decided that since hair really also represents female sexuality, to incorporate hair in this in a very, very visceral way. Also, it was compelling both because it has a formal juxtaposition to the video imagery, and also a real resonance for what it represents. So when one comes to this show, one will see a lot of hair and these projections of the dancer. That's the work.
Wow. That's a very complicated story and a fascinating one. I mean, not complicated, but it's
multi-layered.
Complex and multi-layered. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that, not only is it kind of an extraordinary story, but it's in a way an ancient one, right? Like Judith and Holofernes, this idea of, you know,
exactly,
a woman killing a man or men in this one way is kind of extraordinary. And I guess you read about that story somewhere in historical
This particular document? Story, it's actually called Schillinger and the Dancer, and which now is the title of this work. But it, yes, I read a lot of archival material, and this was particularly an essay that was by a historian named Kirsty Chatwood. So I decided to focus this piece on that because, you know, again, it's difficult to distill something so packed as sexual slavery, as are, you know, so many social issues, to be able to work with as an artist. And, you know, I really do feel we're living in very different times when making a poster or a two-dimensional image is not necessarily the only way to effectively demonstrate or describe what's happening in the world. So I'm moving more and more towards it, towards using video actually, but trying not to use it actually in a narrative way or an illustrative way, but instead a little bit more poetically, I suppose, symbolically.
And that's a tall task. I mean, I agree with you. That does sound what, you know, the way to communicate that kind of multi-layered message, as you're saying. In that multi-layered message, just to explore that a little more, because that's such a like a difficult topic and an important one. In your presentation, you know, we're talking about sexual slavery, but there's also a kind of focus on the power of the victim in that situation, which is
exactly,
which is really kind of curious. And the reason I think I thought it was multi-layered or complex or complicated, I was saying, is because on one hand it seems to almost say that the victim, there are these wonderful stories of the victim having power, but on the other hand, it's hard to believe that often victims can't get out of a situation. In other words, I remember reading, I think it was a book by Primo Levi, who's writing about the Holocaust, and he was saying, I go to a classroom and I give a lecture and I'm talking to kids, and the kids, and he says, inevitably, there'll be, you know, one kid in the class, you know, and these are like, I guess, very young kids, who say, look, next time if this happens to you, go over to the fence, crawl underneath, go out, kill one of the guards, and keep running. He said, you know, there's this sense that there was a way that I could have escaped that I didn't try. And he said that seems to be something that as humans won't let go of. And, you know, in this case, that's almost like a scenario of that, isn't it? Here's a woman who, even though she was killed, she kind of did this heroic act.
Right.
But
so
there
what
was
does
this
that say
act
about
act.
Human survival? Right. I mean, I think that's your question. How do we choose to survive or to acquiesce to knowing
right.
the situation, impossibility? And yes, she was. It bespeaks both human survival and, in particular, form of survival as a woman, knowing where her power was and trying to give it, you know, with no pun intended, her best shot. And it was interesting for me to read several versions of this story. They varied in that maybe one story said there was one Gestapo officer named Schillinger and another who was a bystander who happened to get shot. You know, there were variations of whether or not she was Jewish or whether she was a Polish woman who was caught because she was the underground. These stories varied, but the bottom line in them all was about the empowerment and the disempowerment of a woman. And so that's, yeah, and again, for me, in all of the work that I do, the overall humanity, you know, how we are wired as humans is actually really the most important to me. So it's not, while this is particular about being a woman, there is also, I'm glad that you brought up the Primo Levi, there is really also the larger question, which is about how we survive. So survival is actually a big theme, so to speak, in the work that I do.
Right, how we survive, but also how others. I mean, there's one other case it reminds me of, which is, you know, more recent, a domestic case. I was going to a lecture hearing about women who were pardoned by the governor of, I think it was Rhode Island then, for jail sentences for murder when they were involved and when they were being domestically abused. And this one woman tells this story of how her husband was abusing her, and it had gone on, and she said, you know, one night he was sure she was going to kill him, and she, while I was beating her, she grabbed his gun, and she shot him, and he said to her, I mean, I'll never forget this, it was so chilling, he said, bitch, you shot me, I'm going to kill you, and she unloaded the gun in him, and then she went right to the police, and the police said, she said, the first thing they said to me is, we knew this was going to happen. And you know, and she's, you know, was in jail for 5 years before they let her out. And she also said, you know, everyone said to her, why didn't you get away? Why didn't you run away? Why didn't you do this? And, you know, it was sort of a stunning and a fascinating account of how
it
she
is
said
stunning.
People seem to be still wired to ask her that question and not understand what it means to be
abused.
To be trapped in a situation. Yeah, to be abused and to also feel and to be truly trapped in a situation. So,
that's
you know,
right.
that's such a complex notion of, I think what you're saying about how we're wired, how we understand that, that's still difficult for me to understand, you know, how we stay in situations that are abusive.
Yeah, I can't even answer. I can't even begin to answer that question myself.
But it opens up a lot of questions. It's really the issue,
yeah.
I guess, with this show.
Yes.
Do you expect more discussion on that? Like how does the show manifest itself afterwards in terms of people dealing with this? Do people talk about this or no?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because one of the more interesting aspects of this show is that the curators are organizing panels around this and workshops so that it doesn't just remain within the gallery situation, but instead it can move around in a more participatory way. And one that is scheduled for October 1st at the Brooklyn Museum at the Sackler Center will be a panel with a panel discussion about this, and there will be an eminent artist, on the panel who is going to be there, Luisa Venezuela, who is the director of Pan Argentina, Shirin Shreet and Eleanor Hartney, and Fionn Gunn, the curator, and I will be moderating that. That will be an opportunity to discuss this. There are two others that are being planned. The venues have not yet been located. So, yes, the intention of the curators is to actually raise a lot of discussion about this, you know, to use actually their institutions, so to speak, galleries, as a great vehicle and way to promote more discussion about this. So, and, you know, we're grateful to the Brooklyn Museum, to the Sackler Center, for allowing the opportunity for the panel there and looking for other ones. So if anyone wants to have other panels, please contact Lightbox for that because they want to make it move. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for that. You know, I hope to be there, and there's links in this interview, and everyone's listening to this interview in time to go to either that panel in New York or the projection in London. Is there, before we close, is there anywhere you want to direct people to get more information? Your website will be on there, but seeing as so much of your work has this call to action to some extent, is there anything you want to leave with viewers in terms of what they can do or what they should be reading after this interview?
Right. Well, I will be listing, along with the gallery and the gallery who is helping to produce this, Cynthia Reeves and the Totally Thames Festival, and Cape Farewell, which, by the way, is a terrific art and environment group based in London but working all over the world. And we'll be working with the COP21 in Paris. So we will be listing actually all over the place various websites that we will be directing people to. There will be data about what's happening with the Greenland and the Arctic melt. There will be other informational resources about what's happening currently with the planet and climate change. I also plan and hope to be able to be doing this work on a large scale in New York. And when and if this project moves around the world, at each place, I will be collecting material from local scientists about specifically what's happening there. So we are working with scientists right now, as we very speak, at King's College and with Cape Farewell to have more information about what's happening with the Thames. And I would hope to be doing this in New York next year and working with specifically Hudson River so that in each place where this happens, there will be local information about specifically about what's happening with the water and then larger global effects. So for the Watershed Project, that is what I would like to get people to. And of course, with the sexual slavery show, there will be tremendous amount of information at the gallery about this. And, you know, for better and for worse, but mostly for better right now, every day there seems to be something coming out in the media about what's happening in the world, continuing to happen in the world with this terrible issue of women that is obviously centuries old. As long as we have been humans on Earth, there has been this kind of sexual abuse, and finally it's beginning to get some notice and discussion. So hopefully this will continue that discussion. And that is what I would like to say and be able to do and contribute as an artist.
Anita, thanks so much for talking with us today. A number of the links that you mentioned will be in the article, of course, for people to research more. But I just want to thank you again for talking with me today.
Thank you, Brainard. Thank you for your great questions, too. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.